Again, good morning. I am Mr. Frank, and I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Well, as you have heard, you know, earlier from other speakers, you know, that I spoke, you know, I am one of these so-called grateful recovering alcoholics. Speaking of being grateful, you know, it took me many, many years to say as such. I've said to myself many a times, you know, that this is going to be my last drink. And I guarantee, you know, each and every one of you has said that. Many a times, you know, that this is going to be my last drink. This is going to be my last drink. I never thought, you know, that alcohol would be a problem to this person. I never used to. If I can recall, you know, take an inventory of my own personal livelihood, you know, especially during the high school years, I drank. We had fun. Fun, mind you. We laughed. We joked. We never knew that alcohol was a progressive illness. Mind you. Many of you, you know, never knew that it was a progressive illness. But it got to a point to where I got so hopeless. I got so hopeless. I've heard many of times, you know, that I went through hell and back. Mind you. I was speaking to a group just 2 nights ago. There they said, you know, there were nothing but young kids that has this problem of alcohol. And here I was telling them, you know, I see you situated there, you know. And I have a lot of respect towards each and every one of you, but looks like, you know, it seems like, you know, I have pampered each and every one of you, but look at yourself, where you're situated. And for what reason? Alcohol. Alcohol. That's who I was, you know, at your age at one time. But I never used to admit to myself or to whoever that alcohol was a problem to my livelihood. I felt for my family today. I felt for them. Because, you know, I've lived with her, you know, since day one till today. We have 6 kids of our own. We've lost one, you know. And none of them never had seen me under the influence of alcohol. I made a very, very strong house rule there at the house. No drinking, no smoking in that household. That's where we stand as of today. My kids that are still living have outgrown me already to this age, you know. They've got families of their own, you know. And they still obey, you know, the rule that was made for them as they were growing up. Today, I live alcohol-free and drug-free. There's a lot that I can show to my family today. But just by being sober doesn't mean that, you know, I have everything. No. I have to work for it. We have to work for it. Mind you. And that love and respect has to come from heart and mind to show to your families. At one point in time, just think, you know, the way we treated, you know, our loved ones. Just think. If I was to come to think of it, you know, I'll cry my heart out. That's who I was, you know. I was one of them guys, you know, that was very tough. You never did even play with this guy, you know, or else. Kind of a person, you know. I've been given 50-50 chances, you know, because of my drinking. But thank Creator, thank Heavenly Father, our higher power. I'm standing here, alcohol-free and drug-free. Life. If you come to think of it, you know, your life that you came through, you know, each and every one of us, you know, had came through a life, you know, through an avenue, you know, where there was alcohol involved, drugs involved, you know. We didn't get anywhere. So we was going down 6 feet, you know. But by the grace of somebody higher than us, you know, we made it back to reality. That's where we are as of today. by the grace of Creator, Heavenly Father, Great Spirit, for someone higher than us, you know, we're here, alcohol-free and drug-free. That's the best that you can ask for your livelihood. And then thinking of your families, you know, they highly look up to you with respect. They honor you. They honor you. They praise you for who you are, mind you. But during your drinking days, you know, just think, you know, who you were. They shove you out of from the family. You're incarcerated. You're in jail. You're in detox. You're in treatment, you know, that kind of a thing. And then you try to see yourself, you know, negatively. Negatively. You know, who in the hell am I? Is it worth living this life of mine? It's not. That's how suicidal ideation, you know, usually come, you know, to life. Really. Boom. They get fed up with it. We came to that point. Even I. So who in the hell am I? You know, why live this life, you know? That was me at one time, just mind you, you know. I thank Creator again, you know. He gave me that spiritual awakening to see who I was, you know, to see who I am, you know. We've heard from others, you know, as of early, that, you know, race, color, clan doesn't make no difference, you know. When that addiction, you know, gets into you, race, color, clan doesn't make no difference. You can be a millionaire. You can be the poorest, you know, on the street. That problem with alcohol, it's only one that affects everyone throughout the world of ours. Mind you, I ain't no millionaire. I'm a hard worker. And I try to make my life, you know, in a good way, in a right way, by the grace of someone higher than us. Higher than me, you know, asking him daily. You saw me earlier, you know, praying, asking. And that prayer wasn't only meant for this guy. It was meant for each and every one of you. By the grace of someone higher than us, you know, so that you'll be living your life, you know, in a good way, in the right way. Not only you as individuals, your respective families, you know, your loved ones. There's some that are left behind, you know, thinking of you, you know. I wonder how mom's doing. I wonder how dad's doing. We hope, we pray that he'll have a safe arrival. We hope to see him in good health and in good spirit, you know, in that sense. That's how the prayer went. It was meant for each and every one of you, in our way, in our native Towa way. You saw me taking out my pouch. It's only we, you know, the male figures, you know, that usually carry those. We pray wherever we go, wherever we go. Once arriving, entering, wherever, we pray. And we don't pray for ourselves. We pray for each and every one of you, your loved ones, you know, so that you'll all be living that life of yours, you know, and walking that path in harmony, in good health, and in good spirit. I'd like to thank each and every one of you, and I'd like to thank Al, our brother, for giving me these honors, you know, to come up at least share a little bit of this person. And I thank you all. Thank you.
My name's Susie, and I'm an alcoholic. I've never been up on a old-timers panel before. I don't think of myself as still that, but I guess my sobriety date is February the 4th, 1980, so I just had 24 years of sobriety. And that happens to be my old wedding anniversary. But I was missing for days, you know, so. And it's good to know, you know. It's good to know. Thank you very much. And thank you, Jean. I heard you this morning. You know, when we sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and we listen to each other, sometimes we hear one person, and I heard you. Thank you for sharing, and you touched me. And my story parallels yours very much. And you were talking about a bar here in town, the Spruce or Goose or whatever it is over here, the Blue. Anyway, and I had a thought this morning. I was looking at these little children. My mind's going a lot of places, and I have a lot of emotion this morning. This is my third year coming to this convention. I met this man this morning from Crested Butte, and it's his first year, and I put my hand out to him as you did to me 3 years ago, because that's what we do here. And 3 years ago, I was on my way. Ooh, I had a lot of, it's good tears. I was on my way. My husband and I were on my way to our way to Springfield, Missouri. I have a mother that lives there, an older mother, and a little sister, and some family members. And we were looking. I was reading a grapevine in the car, and we needed a stop. I was coming from, I think, Arizona, anyway. And we were coming through, and so I said, hey, there's a deal here. And I find Alcoholics Anonymous wherever I go. There's a deal here. My husband and I are both sober in this program. It's a AA boy meets AA girl on AA campus as newcomers. And there's people here to attest to that. And we stayed sober, and we did, and we've been married 22 years, one day at a time. And anyway, we stopped here, and we were welcomed with open arms, and were embraced and became part of, you know. And then the next year, I wanted to come back. I thought it, you know. I thought, I want to come here. And we told some other good friends of ours that are from Utah, because your circle just gets bigger here. I don't know about you. I do know about you, because we share. Whatever, if you're in here, you're just like me. You didn't come here because you burped and came to AA, you know. You came here. And it's, my world was very small at the end of my drinking, very small. It was about a 6-mile radius in the San Fernando Valley, and it was closing in on me, and it was getting smaller and smaller. My mind's going a lot of places this morning. And I had a thought about this bar over here, and I remember I was a teenage mother, and I was alcoholic, and I drug that little boy places. I said I would never take him. I was raised with alcoholism, and I said I would never take him or do those things to him. But I was 19. I staved off the madness till I was 19. And I picked up a drink, and I was off and running, and on a regular basis. And I remember putting him to sleep. He was a little baby boy, throwing him on a, because I wasn't ready to leave the bar yet, and with my lesser companions, and throw him on a table, on a pool table, and throw a jacket over him and leave him there. And he was crying, and he wanted to go home, and he was cold, and he needed his diaper changed. But I wasn't finished drinking, and went down from there. And that was my life. That was just my life. And may not mean a lot to you, but it means a lot to me. My drinking, anyway, back here, I came to this convention, and it's a gift that I get to go to my mother's house, because when my, you said it very well, you know, I was one of those that said, I'm not hurting anybody but me. It's my business what I do with my life, you know, and I just roared to the lives of others. I come from a lot of alcoholism, yet my father, at the end of my drinking, because of my behavior, because I have that personality change, you know, I am Susie Hyde, and I have that personality change, and my father would not allow me to come to my parents' home any longer. He says, you're not going to darken our door or hurt your mother anymore. You're not coming around here at the very end of my drinking, and it took a while, you know, after I got sober. I ended up almost losing my life to this disease. I kept drinking. I'm an old pill head as well. And I mixed a lot of pills in with my drinking. Better Living Through Chemistry in the 60s, you know. And I worked in pharmacy as a pharmacy tech, a candy store. And it got worse and worse and worse. And I ended up a wino and a lot of pills and drinking on bleeding ulcers and the physical condition deteriorating, and nothing was important except for the booze and the drugs. And I ended up through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I didn't stay my first time. I went in and out for about 3 months, drunk at the meetings, and they would say, Susie, it only gets worse, never better, you know. And I had a lady tell me that she's, you're in the grips of a progressive illness. She was a drug and alcohol counselor. And all I could see was that it passed the baskets, and I thought it was like church. They needed money, you know. And it just kept getting worse. And my last drunk was an overdose, and my heart stopped 2 times. And I ended up in the hospital again, because I was making the hospitals and the institutions by then. And I laid in intensive care for about 6 days. And my mother says I said a prayer, and I don't remember it, but my mom stood over me, and she said that I said, God, if you want me, it's okay, and if you don't want me, it's okay. And I lived, you know. And we're miracles here. We really are, those of us that are fortunate enough to survive alcoholism, you know. And I got back to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been coming ever since, a day at a time. And I heard someone here say that this morning, and it's my experience. I have a forgetter. I am very willful still today. and I have to learn. I get a daily reprieve. I have to listen to Jean, and I have to listen to other people so that I hear their message, so that I don't forget, you know. I lost most of the things that I was hanging on to, including my child in my first year of sobriety. It took about 8 months to get him back, but I stayed sober. And lots and lots and lots of things have happened since I've been sober, and not all the things that I would choose for my life. That's just the way life is. It deals its cards, and we pick them up, and we play the hand, and we play it sober, is what I was told, that I don't drink no matter what, no matter what. And I haven't, thank you, God, one day at a time. And my recovery began, and I, you know, have been going on. And I think the greatest thing that has helped me in sobriety is putting my hand out to another person, and I think it talks about that in the book. And that's what helped me the most, is because when I'm out of me and not thinking about me 24 hours a day, I do better. The biggest 12-step call that I've had since I've been sober was my own son. And when I had 10 years of sobriety, he was dying of this disease. He'd been missing for about 6 months, and he was living with skinheads in Central California, a beautiful son that I, my only child. And he called for help. And he'd been exposed, like someone else said, to these meetings, because I started dragging him when he was 12 years old to these meetings. But it didn't save him from the disease of alcoholism. And we ended up carrying the message to him, and eventually it took him about a year, but he got it. I'm not responsible for that. All I did is lay down the spiritual kit of tools that you did for me. And the men and the women at Alcoholics Anonymous carried the message to him, and he has 15 years of recovery, and he was 22 when he got sober, and he's very active at Alcoholics Anonymous. The rest of our family pretty much has died of this disease, and I can't save anyone. I can only carry the message and hope that it takes. I sound a little this morning. My life is really very happy and joyful. It's just I have a lot of emotion going this morning, and I don't know why, and I don't try to figure those things out. And I'll settle down and get at ease, and thank you for allowing me to share.
Good morning, friends. My name is Dave. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Dave.
And I've come a long way. I come from Pietermaritzburg, which is in KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa. And I'd like to thank Al for asking me to share. And my friend over there, Bob, from Flagstaff, Arizona, who we met in 2000 on our way to Minneapolis, and he was kind to enough to invite four of us from South Africa into his home here in Francis. And when I came here first in 95 to San Diego, you people said, keep on coming back. So this is my fourth visit. And to be here with you people, it's really something. I get a bit emotional, so you must please excuse me. I was never an alcoholic, you know, I was a drunk. And my late wife had been going to meetings, she'd been in rehab. And I woke up one morning, and I never felt like a drink. And at the time, I didn't think where this was going to lead me. And Adele said to me, what are you going to do? Why don't you do some work around the house? And I wasn't, at that time of my life, I wasn't one for doing much around the house. It was around the pubs and stuff like that. And I was a blackout drunk. But I said something most unusual. I said, are you going to that meeting tonight? And she said, yes. And I went to the club. I watched the football, soccer, you know, the English soccer. And I never even had a drink. Most unusual. Sometimes I never got back, maybe a day or two later I'd get back. And I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was my most recent drink, as I heard some guys in AA say, was on the 25th of July. And that was the year your guys fell into the Pacific when they came back from the moon, Armstrong and Co. They fell into the Pacific, into the drink, and I fell out of the drink into the arms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've stuck with you ever since. It's been a wonderful journey. My life, I never wanted to go to school. I hear you guys talking about high school and college. I don't know what terms it is, but our high school was my second year was high school. I wasn't going to school, and my parents eventually let me go because I wasn't going anywhere. And I became a messenger boy in the post office. I used to ride a bicycle around Durban, which is on the Indian Ocean, the east coast of South Africa, delivering telegrams. And in those telegrams, there were messages of hope. There were messages, there were good messages, there were bad messages. And that's what I hope my last job in life is going to be, is that I'll be here with you people, letting you know the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, that there is life without booze. Not for those who need it, but those who want it. Because I most probably needed it for a long time. I drank for about 25 years. But I never wanted it. I came from an alcoholic family. Fortunately, quite a few of us have managed to find or been found, as I believe I was found by you people, because I never wanted to stop drinking. If I had what I like to call, which I came to learn, was a spiritual awakening when I woke up that morning. I never felt like a drinker, and I've never felt like one since. But I've never left you people. I've stuck around. I became a winner. You know, we grow bananas where I come from, big bunches of bananas. And one of the old guys said, if you stick to the bunch, you won't get peeled. So I decided that I better stick to this bunch. And it's taken me to wonderful places. People spoke a lot about coming here and getting lost. I remember one of our rallies up in the mountains there in KwaZulu-Natal, and the mist. And this speaker got up and he apologized for being late. He said, you know, we got lost, but thank God we were sober and we knew we were lost. So always wanting to go to England and watch the soccer, you know, that was my dreams as a young man. At the age of 64 and a half, my late wife's sister, she passed away 2 weeks short of her 20th anniversary in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So we shared a lot of time together, a lot of good time together. We were sober longer than we were married, which was great. And I heard of this big international convention in San Diego, and I had my late wife's younger sister was staying in Los Osos, which is near Morro Bay, which is halfway between San Francisco and L.A. And I got into the airplane the first time in my life. I was 64 and a half, and it was quite a long flight from South Africa. And I had a ball, and I met people there. I met people like myself. And my roommate was a guy, Warren, from North Dakota, Fargo. And I've since had the privilege of coming back and going up with the lady here from Minnesota, from Minneapolis, a young man. I come from good boozing stock too. My grandpeople were from Scotland and from Ireland. And I was born in Australia and brought up in South Africa, so I've got a good pedigree to become an alcoholic. And so I've had the good fortune of becoming I believe that I spread the gospel of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I'm not ashamed of the fact that I'm a member of this fellowship. And whenever I go, whether it's on an aeroplane, and I'm not alone. Back in our town, we've got a lot of Indians. The biggest Indian population outside of India, not the Native Americans, but the Indians from Bombay and those places. And they are our biggest meetings in my hometown are with the Indian people. And they're very humble people too. Same as you people. I find a lot of people within the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, and I like the way you speak. You're all very quiet spoken and stuff like that. So I'm beginning to ramble on. I was at a convention in Australia over Easter weekend in Townsville. Then I came through Fiji, and I gained an extra day of sobriety because we left there on a Tuesday evening and I arrived in LA on a Tuesday morning. So so I could add an extra day of sobriety to my tally, which I'm so grateful for. That something that I never earned, it was by the grace of God. I never wanted to stop drinking. I mean, it was the best thing in my life, but it was doing things to me that I had no control of. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was lucky I wasn't a violent drunk. I got done in many times. I never won a fight. But I think the biggest fight that I lost was the battle of the bottle. I lost the battle of the bottle and became a winner by meeting up with you. And a lot of the guys that we used to meet during the 70s before Mozambique and Angola got the independence, were guys from the States, from the Gulf States, from Lauderdale, Miami, and the East Coast, and I'd always get a phone call to go pick someone up and go to a meeting. And one of my mates, Jim, from Miami, he was a big Irish-American guy, and he would say, for him, in AA, there's endless hope. Outside, it would be a hopeless end. I'd like you all to thank you all for allowing me to be here, to share, and God bless you. Thank you.
I'm CJ, I'm an alcoholic, and I am an old timer. My sobriety date is January 27, 1979. When I was new in a program, I thought the old-timers were boring, and perhaps we are, because all we talk about is how glad we are to be sober and how we did it. We didn't pick up a drink, and we went to meetings. There's never been a time in a whole 25 years that I haven't tried to my best ability to get at least one meeting a week. I have a friend up in Taos who says, well, maybe you're not really an alcoholic. Didn't you just be a young person? You didn't really know how to drink. Well, I drank my way out of the advertising business. I mean, the whole thing occurred in bars. And it's the case that right when she was talking to me about this, I had just moved to Albuquerque, and, you know, when you're in a transition, it could be easy to fall in a hole. Her nephew died of alcoholism in February, right upon the heels of this conversation. I joined the Foothills group when I moved here, and I am very comfortable there. I am so happy that I have Alcoholics Anonymous and people to talk to, because I am an alcoholic. I drank my life away, and I think the important thing about being an old-timer is that I'm still here, and that the longer that I'm here, the more things I have I want to do with my life. I just got a really great new job here in Albuquerque, and I'm just tearing it up, you know. And ever since back in the day when I got sober, I kind of turned my back on being ambitious and making money and having a fabulous life. All I want to do is stay sober. And I'm a painter and a writer, too, so I kept doing that, and I always had day jobs. So this is the first really important job I've had. And how I got to the Red Road Convention today is I decided, well, you don't ask, you don't get. It's right in my contract that we are not allowed to ever ask for Friday or Saturday off. So I went up to the manager, and he's like a real tall, very kind of stiff guy. I mean, he's real nice underneath his tall stiffness. And I said, Buck, I'm going to ask you this one time. I know the answer is no, but if there's any way, I want to go to a powwow on Friday and Saturday. He looked at me. I don't look like someone that it's life and death for me to go to a powwow, but that's the way it is for me. And he said yes. And I thought, well, isn't this interesting? Because when I'm clean and sober, and when we're clean and sober, miracles happen every day. I mean, the fact that we're clean and sober, that is the miracle. That's what we're here for. So the point to me of coming up here today really is I've had two friends die of this disease in the last 3 months, and both of them were old-timers. You know, where we talk about we want to carry the message to those who still suffer? One of them had moved here from California, moved to New Mexico. I didn't even know she was in the program. I never saw her in a meeting. And she started drinking again. And she died around Christmas time. Her name was Kate. And she had 16 years sober in California. Then, 2 weeks ago, I'm talking to a friend up in Taos, and my friend Barbara died. And Barbara had about 17 years. She went out. Nobody really knew. I mean, when we go out, what do? I mean, we drink. We have three choices. We're here, like we can we can get sober or we can take one of the three choices, or maybe all of them. Madness, in a mental hospital, we can go to jail. We can run over somebody with our car. We can kill him in a bar fight at the Spruce. Or we can die. This is a fatal illness. And I think if it were only like this grim thing ahead, I don't know, I would have been going to meetings all the time, all these years. And but I've always loved it. I came in and I just never wanted to humiliate myself the way that I did back there at McCann Erickson. I'd worked 10 years for this career and I blew it. I just completely was asked to leave the business. So this is now, and the future is bright. And I'm very old. That's another problem with being an old timer, is to get to be an old timer, you have to be old. I really am so grateful to be here. I came to this particular convention a couple times before, and last time one of the speakers says, "You're going to remember this for the rest of your life." You know how Dr. Phil says, "This day will change your life." Well, this day can change our life. And anybody of you out there at any time from this day forward, when you think, oh, maybe I'll just stop going to the program, it's boring. Listen, those old-timers go on and on. Maybe in memory of Kate or Barbara or all the other fallen people, I think we all have people who have died of this disease. Maybe you'll just get a meeting, tie a knot in your rope and hang on, and just don't drink this one day. That's the name of the whole game. And I've had a lot of ups and downs in sobriety, but I've also fulfilled all my dreams except for becoming very, very, very stinking rich. And that's what I'm working on now. Thank you.
Hi, everybody. I'm Betty, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have every intention of buying this tape if y'all do one little thing. Today's my daughter's 27th birthday in AA, and her name is Veronica. So how about saying happy birthday, Veronica?
Happy birthday, Veronica.
She can be so tickled. She's, I was sitting here thinking about that. She came in when, oh, I can't stand hearing that feedback. Can I turn it just a little bit? Is that okay? Okay. Everything's okay except for these big round things. I'm really, really excited. Last year, Susie's friend Dennis, they got Dennis here, and he called me up and said, "Mark off the first week of May because we're going to Albuquerque." I cannot tell you how full my heart is. This is just scrumptious. I just love it. I've been sober for 37 years. I got sober December 26, 1966. December 27, 1966 was my last drink. And I started at 16 years old in Cutbank, Montana, where my wild drinking started, and that was a wild drinking town. We're talking about the blues. We have 3,000 folks in that town. Right now there's 5,000. You can tell how much change there's been. We had way more bars than we had anything else. We had more bars than they were allowed to have, so they developed a whole lot of private clubs so there could be more bars. And I got away with drinking in all of them because I worked for Wilbur Warner, who had been for so many years the county attorney, and that took care of, Cutbank was Glacier County, it took care of all the Blackfeet Nation, and nobody ever asked any questions. If I went to a bar in the little towns around and said I worked for Wilbur Warner, they knew you had to be 21, so it didn't matter how I looked, they just served me. And I've always got away with getting all the booze I ever wanted, and I never ran out. And I started my first alcoholic, I'm a product of alcoholics family too. I had an alcoholic mother, and I'm an alcoholic, and had an alcoholic daughter. You know, there's death in the family. There's all that stuff. It's not fun, and it's not pretty. But I'm going to be different. I'm going to be the one who's just a little drunk having a good time. And by the time, when I was 16, I had my first alcoholic drunk, and that must have been DE Day. We all went out, started on Dandelion Wine, which is pretty strong, and got down there to the local cafe, and everybody went in for hamburgers, and I hung my head out the door and threw up. And after that, I said, didn't I have a good time? How soon can I do it again? When I got sober and listened to you guys for a while, I realized that I had never been sober for 30 days since that day. I might have made 2 weeks a couple of times, but I doubt that I made more than a week, much. And it didn't take very long for me to be a daily drunk. I was married in 1949 to a sweet guy and had three children, and he was killed in an airplane crash. Those three kids, by the way, are on the tribal records, the Cherokee Nation in Oklahoma. And so, you know how drinking goes. You go along and you get drunk and you're a mess and you make a fool of yourself and you pretend it didn't happen. You get somebody to say something else. And then after that, I don't know, we hit a few, the book talks about a little bit of control, and we hit some of that. My first husband and I, he, I don't think he was an alcoholic. His dad and his brothers were, but I don't think he was. So when he was killed, you know, I would get away with my drinking by dragging out my sad, pitiful story of my mother and my childhood and the whole thing, and everybody'd get off my back, and that was nice, and I was kind of getting bored with that story, and my drinking was increasing again. I couldn't keep it down anymore. And so now they excuse me because I'm the poor little widow lady with no money and three kids. And, you know, I knew in deep inside myself that my drinking did not escalate because my husband was killed. I couldn't not drink. I couldn't get enough. I did all the things that everybody wishes that they'd never done, you know, that you're not going to do to your kids, with your kids, around your kids. And I did it all. And continued, got myself another husband. He was looking for a family, and he got one. He got my three kids. All those tax deductions, it was just great. He thought I was the cutest thing he ever did see. He met me on Saturday nights in a single place, you know, and he didn't know that he never saw me sober. So we get married, and he finds out what kind of a drunk I am, and 6 weeks later he's packing his bags because he doesn't think this is too good an idea. But I talked him into staying. I'm not really sure why, but, you know, I'm sure there's a bunch of duck hunters out here. And he was a duck hunter. Frankly, I don't think there's a lot of difference between a duck hunter and an alcoholic. But, and he was a good drunk besides. So, you know, we had our run, and he hung around for another 4.5 years, and I got here. By the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I mean, I knew about it. I'd known about it for years. My mother died of alcoholism. And I knew it was the first drink that gets you drunk. I knew that. And I knew that when the day came that I knew I had a problem, I just wouldn't do it anymore. I'm a strong-willed person. I took care of myself forever. Took care of anybody else that came along, you know, the old caretaking thing. But when the time came, I couldn't quit. And I had to give up those bars. In Montana, we called them shit-kicking bars. And I had to give up those bars, and I really like bars. And I like the atmosphere, and I like the whole thing, but I couldn't do that anymore, so I had to drink at home. And I would drink all by myself, and I'd have to get to the place. I liked everything, but I got, you know, Red Mountain wine was very nice. It was cheap, and you know, I looked good when I told my husband I'm saving this money. For, you know, buy a case at a time, it's cheap. The only problem with it was it was time to go to the dentist. I'd have to quit drinking because my teeth were purple, my tongue was purple, and it doesn't look good, and what would they think, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I'd have to go throw up in the kitchen sink to keep my drinks down. And I was having, oh, gosh, I'd had double vision for so long, but I'm only in the house, so it didn't show. I wore contact lenses, and I learned it was really bad to not take them out because it wouldn't look good. You're all swollen up and you can't see. My whole thrust was not to look like an alcoholic. I got to keep the bottle. My whole thrust was, if you don't do this and do it that way and manage it that way, they're going to get your bottle. That was the bottom line of everything. And I fell off. I remember one time falling off my Oh, I know. I take my contact lenses out. I don't see too well without them. But it didn't matter. If you're drunk, you don't need them. Take my contact lenses out. I tried to always have a pretty bathrobe. Get that on. So if I passed out, it wouldn't look like I fell asleep. You don't want to have your clothes on when the kids get up to go to school. It doesn't look good. So I do stuff like that. I fell off my couch and hit myself in the right place and bled all over this pretty robe and myself. Went in the bathroom and flipped on the light, and there was my face all bloated up and blood and my daughter's face, fearful. And I saw me and my mother. And my answer was, don't turn on the light anymore. And that's what happens to us drunks. We look for ways to hide what's happening because we got to have another drink. So when I got here because one day somebody brought a drunk to my house who'd been sober at AA for a while, and I was widowed, and back that first widowhood, and they said, you know, she's drinking again. We got to take her someplace. It's safe at your place. What did they think it was safe? I had to put my bottle up, my drink up in the cupboard while she came. But 5 years later, this is the woman I called. And she got me to a place called Little House in Bellflower. And it was a little place put together by a few men and women. And I mean put together with a spare sheet, a pot, a frying pan, 3 pounds of coffee, donations, so there would be a place for a woman like me. And the only question is, do you have a desire to be sober? Didn't matter how bad you smelled, and I smelled so bad. It just went around me like this. It didn't matter about baths. It didn't matter. Just reeked. And white sheets are always kind of yellow looking from sweating. And I weighed 100 pounds. And I went to that place, couldn't get the clothes off. Got a bathrobe. Got down the road in the bathroom. She took me to that place. I remember the ride down Clark Street in Long Beach. And everything was gray. What I had was color blindness. There was no green grass. It was all gray. And I didn't know that that was from alcoholism. I had had DTs just a few hours before I come out of them. I'd had alcoholic amnesia. Couldn't remember anything. I had a pretty bathrobe on, though. And my family had bought me a real pretty bathrobe. They thought if they dressed me up, I'd behave better. Never worked, and they never quit trying. So I got down the road, and I got to that little tiny house. It was a little two-bedroom place, and a little teeny tiny wrinkled-up old lady, about my age, opened the door. And you know what? She put her hand on my arm, and she said, well, this girl's sick. Let's put her to bed. And I felt it through my whole body. It's imprinted. I didn't understand that was a spiritual experience, you know, okay? And she took me in and she put me to bed. Good thing. And I immediately crossed my hands upon my, and I said, call the priest. Thank the Lord that she knew better. She'll come out of it and everything will be all right. So I was there for New Year's Eve, and I remember sitting there with this woman, and we called her Pee Wee. And I sat there with this woman, and she... And I was thinking, if I was home, I could have a couple of beers, and that'd be all right, because that doesn't count. Beers never counted. And I must have said something, and she said, I know all about that. I know all about that Great Falls beer. I said, well, what do you know about Great Falls? That's Montana stuff. Well, she said, I lived there. And I said, well, where did you live? She said, well, I had a little town you ain't never heard of. I said, well, tell me. She said, Wheeler, Montana. I said, I lived in Wheeler, Montana. That was a man-made town just for the purpose of building Fort Peck Dam. And it turned out that she, her husband had the drugstore and my dad had the grocery store, and we lived there in exactly the same time, all that many years ago. In my neighborhood, they had a throwaway paper, and I'd been reading articles in there called The Night People, and they talked to my soul, and I didn't know why. And the woman down the street said, the man who writes that is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I threw him in the trash from that day on because I couldn't have that stuff around me. And I got sober, and I got in that little house. And on Friday night, a guy came to borrow the coffee pot to make a Friday night meeting. And he leaned against the table when he left. And he folded his arms and he looked at me, and I was leaving that night. Go home. He said, easy does it, Betty. And he became my sponsor. and he lived sober for 27 years. My home group is Indian Charlie's in Artesia, where I got sober. And I want to tell you why it was named and what it meant, because this is important to me. There was a great big sign on the front of the podium, and it said, "There is no such thing as a hopeless drunk." And Charlie, the man for whom it was named, was a man who had been drunk a lot. And he'd been picked up for 30 days and 60 days and 90 days and whatever the heck it was in Long Beach at that time. And then he'd be back out in the street, and he'd come to AA, and he'd make a little time, and he'd be back in jail. And one day he got a diagnosis of cancer, and Charlie never drank again. And they said to him, "Charlie, how come? I mean, you know, this is your history, this is the way it's been." And he said, "I want to say I died sober." So that's how come it came to be named that. But the little story about Charlie was that one of the times they picked him up, he was in, the judge said, "I don't want to do it yet." He said, "We've done 30 days, we've done 6 months, we've done this farm, that farm, the whole, I don't want to do it with you, Charlie. I'm thinking about letting you name your own sentence." And Charlie says, "Well, Your Honor, sir, I sentenced me to 30 days. And His Honor went like this, and he says, "And I suspend the sentence." They let him off. I'm a very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love you all, and thanks for welcoming us.
I don't want to leave my bottle.
No. Gotta have that bottle. Reminds me of my father, Roscoe B. He's out in Shiprock. And, you know, through sobriety, we drank a lot and shared bottles. And we stopped in Cuba, New Mexico, and bought a Sprite. And he likes to drink it warm. And he passed it to me and passed it back. And he just busted out laughing. And he held it up like this. And he said, "Who would have ever thought, you know, sharing Sprite? We're riding in a car that's not stolen, you know." George, that was my old brown station wagon we were in. Yeah. And it's exciting. I'm ecstatic. I feel so good. You know, one of the things that we learn about is emotional sobriety. And, you know, I had a friend that I worked with professionally, George F. And, kind of always worried me because I was raised a certain way in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous to do certain things and to the best of your ability. Not perfect, but, you know, what my sponsor told me to do and what other people in the fellowship like you told me to do. And after 15 years of sobriety, he started drinking again and started shooting the drugs. And poor thing, you know, they found him dead in a motel here. And those are tragic stories, but, you know, we all know that the way the disease of alcoholism works, you know, some people have to take their disease to the grave to devise sobriety for somebody else. You know, one of my coworkers, her sister just got hit by a train in Gallup, and she was talking about that to me, and I had a Native American sobriety poem, and I said, "You know, your sister will only know sobriety now." And I said, "The good thing is, you know, I know her family very well, and, you know, she will buy sobriety for somebody else in your family, just like my mom did. She bought sobriety for me, and I was the first one to get sober in my family and the first one to have another drinking episode after about 2 years of sobriety. You know, I just woke up one day and said, you know, I can handle it this time." And, of course, it kicked my butt. And you mentioned Long Beach, you know. I've been in all those jails there. You know, I was ready to go to court. I had my backpack, my attorney, and I was getting ready to go to prison. And then I found out that he was a sports fan. I was playing football for Long Beach City College. And he goes, "Aren't you that Al Benally?" And I go, "Yes, sir." Boy, I clicked my heels, you know. And then I started to lie to him. I said it was those other guys, and he believed me. So I only had to do 6 months in jail and 6 months of weekends in jail. And I've always been truly blessed about that, you know, and even though I had to lie. And to thine own self be true. I really believe that one of the reasons why we're sober today is because we can be honest with ourselves, and in turn, we can be honest with other people. You know, I just wanted to remind you for the activities for the rest of the day. We're going to have lunch on our own from 11:30 to 1:30. Then we're going to have a Red Ball AA meeting from 1:30 to 2:30. And then Art from Santa Fe will be speaking from 3 to 4. Then we'll have another dinner break from 4 to 7. And then the infamous Velma S. will be sharing her experience, strength, and hope with us. It says Window Rock, Arizona, but her home is in the vicinity. Yeah. And then the fantastic DJ Dance, you know. And especially for you newcomers, you know, you people in here, I don't care whether you're male or female, you know, you get to know these people, get them on that dance floor, and feel what it's like to be a little bit animated, but be able to dance in sobriety and want to do it again, you know. And again, it's exciting. I feel so blessed because I know a lot of you here. And you've been very supportive in my sobriety and with my family. And to be here today to enjoy this, I've been looking forward to it all week. Well, actually, like I said, from when we had it last year. And, you know, for you people that come from other communities, if you're new from a treatment center or something like that, you know, reach out a little bit. You know, whatever you came here for, you know, I hope you find what you're looking for, because, you know, part of the old timers here, you know, part of their responsibility is to carry the message, and they still continue to do it. But at some point in time, whether it be through their sponsees or other people in the AA, they pass that baton on to us. You know, and when I receive mine from my sponsor, boy, I'll tell you what, I carry that thing boldly and bravely. And I've never been ashamed to say I'm a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I am a drunk, and I'm sober. And the drinking episode that I had in 1982 was really a blessing in disguise, because no matter how I looked at it, you know, I knew that I could never drink alcohol socially or anything like that. And the same way with drugs. And it feels awfully good to be alcohol and drug free and be with you all today. And to be able to be up here and look at you honestly and openly and receive you in a real good way. And I want to remind everybody, they're going to be sitting back up here in the back, and the tapes will be available, and you know, buy them. And God bless everybody that was on the panel. You know, we had David, CJ, Betty, and of course, bless your daughter, Veronica, and Frank, he had to leave. And we also want to thank Susie for their participation today. And again, God bless you, because we need you, you know, and keep coming back. And without any more stuff here, you know, if you have any questions about the Red Road, you know, ask any committee member. If you want to venture out and you're looking for an AA meeting, we've got Foothills, we've got the Next Step Club, we've got the Desert Club, and way across the river we've got the Mesa Club. And, you know, I'm excited today. I've got my young son that's 22 years old, and, you know, I had to carry the message to him in a jail in Ignacio, Colorado. And he's trying to remain strong. And he's probably got about 6 months of sobriety today, and he should be here, and has blessed me with a new granddaughter, and I'm excited for him. And the best we can do sometimes is pray. But one of the things that's real significant in our relationship is the therapeutic value of one alcoholic helping another. And just to remind him, that's about the only way we can work it out. And you will know when I am being your father, and you will know when I'm being that alcoholic helping another one. The same thing with the therapeutic value of one addict helping another. So, again, it's good to see you. I wish you could all come up here and look at you. You look wonderful, you know. It's almost like sobriety could frighten us, yeah. And I want to thank Jean for her words, because they were real significant to me. You know, real significant to me. And, you know, being raised in an alcoholic home, and my mom was 41 years old when she died from this terrible, terrible disease. But the gift that she gave me was, you know, she bought sobriety for me when I really, really needed it. You know, and I miss her all the time. I also have my little brother John. He was 2.5 years sober when he got killed by a drunk driver. And I have a lot of opportunities to participate in, like, sobriety palos and stuff like that. And, you know, those have been a significant part of my life. And also my profession allows me to be surrounded by drunks every day. And I love it, you know. And I'm sitting there in my office, bring me the biggest, baddest one, you know, because I'm up for the challenge. And just to remind them, too, you know, the Creator must really, really love you. And they go, why? And I said, because He brought you to me, you know. The Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's alive and real. And thank you very much for being here this morning. Enjoy your lunch.